Welcome, podcast listeners. This is Dr. Fred Rivera from the University of Washington and the Firearm Injury and Policy Research Program. We are interviewing today Kelsey Conrick. Kelsey is a doctoral student in the School of Social Work here at the University of Washington, who has done some very interesting work related to extreme risk protection orders. Welcome, Kelsey.
Thanks, first of all,
can you tell our listeners what are extreme risk protection orders and why they're so important?
Yes, absolutely. So extreme risk protection orders, or ERPOs, are a really promising prevention policy designed to reduce the risk of firearm injuries. And this law, it currently exists in some form in 21 states and Washington, D.C., including here in Washington State. And they're filed for individuals who are at substantial and imminent risk of harming themselves or someone else with a firearm. So this policy is really designed for individuals who are experiencing an acute crisis that puts them at higher risk of doing harm with a firearm. And there's a few strengths of ERPOs that I want to highlight that make them a really unique tool for firearm injury prevention. First of all, they're a civil order, so they're not going through the criminal system. And the way this policy is designed focuses on protecting due process for those who have an ERPO filed for them, and that person's known as the respondent. An eligible petitioner, that's usually a law enforcement officer or a family member, can explain to a judge why this individual is at substantial risk of harming themselves or someone else with a firearm, and then the judge will decide whether to grant or deny the ERPO. And then relatedly, they're also designed to temporarily remove the firearm. A temporary order lasts about 14 days and a full order lasts a year. The respondent can also request a judge terminate the order if their crisis has resolved. And so here in Washington, clinicians like physicians and social workers, they can't file ERPOs for their own patients. And they can do that in a couple of states, but not here in Washington. But ERPOs can still be a really powerful tool for clinical practice. Clinicians can educate their patients about ERPOs. And in cases of serious and really imminent risk, they can also contact law enforcement to recommend an ERPO be filed.
Well, that sounds like a really useful tool. So I know you did a survey. Can you tell us about the survey? Who was surveyed and why did you decide to do it?
Yeah, so we reached out to all physicians, nurse practitioners, and social workers in Washington State. It was about 38,000 providers total, and about 4,200 clinicians responded. We did this survey because, first of all, we really just wanted to get an idea of the overall awareness about or of clinicians about ERPOs. And second, we know that clinicians are a really important target audience for ERPOs. They can file themselves, but this can still be a really powerful tool for clinical practice. And so we wanted to understand kind of what are the barriers and the facilitators to their use. So what are clinicians excited about for this tool and what can we do to kind of support them. So we asked about their awareness of different resources, and then we also asked about bearers and facilitators specifically to integrating ERPOs into their clinical practice. We were really excited to see that so many clinicians took the time to respond to open-ended questions to give us their thoughts on ERPOs, and those open-ended questions, the detail that they provided was really the focus of this study.
I know that you're a very talented qualitative researcher, so what barriers did you discover that clinicians have been thinking about using ERPOs?
Yes, thank you for that. The biggest barrier was really just time, which is probably unsurprising for any clinician, including yourself. Clinicians are really pressed for time, and the participants in this study were concerned that they wouldn't have time to dig into these conversations with patients. This discussion isn't a billable service necessarily, and so there's a lot of pressure on clinicians to move through patients as quickly as possible. And then something else that we found that actually surprised us was that a lot of clinicians could see how ERPOs could be a useful tool, but they didn't want to be the ones to bring it up with patients. They had concerns that bringing up this option would potentially, remove firearms from their patients would damage that therapeutic relationship, that clinician-patient trust. And so they told us that by even suggesting ERPO as an option, they were worried that this would make patients not want to disclose crises like suicidality or access to firearms in the future.
I think those are really very valid concerns. In your research, Absolutely. Did you find out that, for example, social workers or psychologists were more concerned about these barriers than, say, internists or regular physicians or nurse practitioners?
Right, absolutely. So we talked about how a lot of the clinicians liked ERPOs, but didn't necessarily want to be the one to talk about patients themselves. There's lots of other people, you know, you mentioned social workers. There's lots of folks who can support clinicians in this role. One thing we heard from a lot of subspecialty providers, like oncologists or endocrinologists, was that they preferred the patient's primary care physician or a clinician with training in mental health, like a psychiatrist, be the one to talk about ERPOs with patients, thinking that that clinician would have either the relationship with patients or the professional training to have these potentially difficult conversations. And then something else we heard from physicians specifically is that they prefer social workers take on that counseling role. And social workers overall seemed willing to take that on. And you know, a lot of my work is focused on social workers. Right. So it was interesting to see this come up so clearly in the survey. All of the clinicians, physicians, ARNPs, and social workers highlighted the unique perspective and training of social workers. And in many settings, social workers also have more time to get to know patients and families and really help them navigate through all of the options for removing the firearm during crisis. And then there was also one non-clinical option that I wanted to highlight. Clinicians were requesting a kind of a community or public health liaison, someone who can walk families through the process of an ERPO or just answer questions. And we have some of those resources here in King County and in a couple of other counties. But I think making that role more widespread will also be critical to the success of ERPO as a policy.
Right. And they'll certainly be helpful to families thinking about filing an ERPO to walk them through the process, so they don't have to be a lawyer to fill out all the paperwork.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who might be other people to take on the role of counseling or using ERPOs?
You know, ERPOs are such a complex policy, and I go back and forth on this on a personal note almost daily. It seems like they can be a really powerful tool for someone who is in an acute crisis. But the one problem, or one of the problems with ERPOs, is that they are still, folks who are respondents for ERPOs are still interfacing with the legal system. Law enforcement officers here in Washington, I think this is true nationwide, they're typically the most common petitioners for ERPOs. And so, but even if there is a civilian petitioner, like a family member, law enforcement are still going in. They're the ones to remove that firearm. A petitioner has to go before a judge to argue why this respondent should have their firearm removed from them. So there's really no way to get around that kind of legal system interaction. And that can be really concerning for a lot of BIPOC communities, Black, Indigenous people of color, who are perfectly reasonably concerned about that kind of interfacing. And that came up with our clinicians too. A lot of our clinicians were highlighting that, in particular for their BIPOC patients or clients, that they were worried that referring them to this legal system that has done so much harm to their community would just kind of exacerbate that harm. So there certain are several concerns with ERPOs as well. They're definitely not a perfect policy.
So, you know, it is a complex policy, but it is felt to be fairly useful. So for our listeners, what do you think are the ways that we can have family members be more knowledgeable about ERPOs and to actually take it on themselves to go ahead and file if they're really worried about a loved one having a firearm, using it to harm themselves or others?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, the first step is really just awareness. This isn't a widely known policy. There are, you know, of course, other policies like the voluntary waiver of firearm rights that are very, very underutilized. And I think it's the same for ERPOs. They may be being underutilized because folks just don't know about them. So I think the first step is just kind of education and letting folks know that these are a resource there. I think the second thing is ensuring that there is someone who is knowledgeable, some kind of community liaison who can really walk people through the process. This is something that has existed for other kinds of protection orders, like domestic violence protection orders, for decades. And so really kind of beefing up that role. I know King County is kind of nationally known for the work that they do in this area. And so expanding those resources statewide is also possible. But, you know, we also highlighted there's a lot of gaps in ERPOs, and they're a relatively new policy. So there's a lot that we don't know here. So I think in this study, even among clinicians who were aware of ERPOs, there was some skepticism. So I think it's going to be really important to continue to be in conversation with clinicians and communities to understand what concerns they have and how we can work with them to find answers to their questions and really build support for ERPOs right. as a tool.
Kelsey, is there anything else that you want to mention before we wrap up?
Yeah, I really just want to thank the co-authors and contributors to this research, particularly Sarah Porter, Emma Gauze, and Drs. Laura Prater, Ali Rahani-Rivar, Megan Moore, and yourself, of course. Y'all have all been instrumental to this study and figuring out how to make this work be useful to clinicians and policymakers. We've really focused on making sure that this has concrete implications for clinicians that they can implement into their own
practice. Thanks very much for talking with us. I really look forward to seeing your future research on this topic. As I said, it's a terribly important area. Well, thanks everybody for
thank
listening
you,
and hope that you enjoy this and our other podcasts. Thank you.